today we'll pick up right where we left off on case number 2. So if you haven't listened to part 1, go ahead and hit pause and give part 1 a listen. Then come back and listen to part 2. And with that, let's get right into it. Visiting Mr. Big during the Winnipeg Police Service's undercover operation. Before I continue, there is a small discrepancy I need to rectify. Tina always referenced Raymond as being 62 years old, but at the time of his trial, Raymond was only 56. Okay, back to Project Styx. Mr. Big asks Raymond to confess to a crime that he is suspected of committing, to pledge his true allegiance to the criminal organization and gain official membership. Police are hoping he'll confess to the murder of Tina Fontaine. But you guessed it. He doesn't. He does not confess to Tina's murder. Let's back it up a little. October 1st, 2014, 2 months after Tina's body is pulled from the Red River, Raymond is arrested for Tina's murder, but police do not immediately charge him. Instead, Raymond is sentenced to serve prison time for 2 unrelated charges, theft and breach of a court order. It's unclear if the charge of theft is for the stolen truck that was reported by Tina. Raymond is released in June of 2015. Now this is when the Winnipeg Police Service decide to launch Project Styx. The entire project consisted of 62 scenarios over the course of around 6 months designed to elicit information and gather evidence. There were a total of more than 10,000 intercepted conversations collected during the 6-month-long investigation. There are several recordings that were played at Raymond's trial where he talked about Tina. I'm going to play a few of them for you, because they're each only a couple of seconds long. Some can be difficult to make out. I'll also read the transcriptions, so you get a general idea of the type of person we're dealing with. Here is one of the first recordings presented at his trial.
And you know, that's why she got killed. She got killed, I mean, she got killed because we found out, I found out she was 15 years old.
If you weren't able to make that out, Raymond is saying, I drew the line, and that's why she got killed. She got killed, I'll make you a bet, she got killed because we found out, I found out, she was 15 years old. Raymond is making assumptions as to why Tina was killed, saying she got killed because we found out. Who is we? Is he referring to a group, or even a gang, on the streets in Winnipeg that found out she was underage after she posed to be 18? But why would they kill her because of her age? Maybe she was dead weight. Or maybe she was just too high of a risk to continue hanging out with. But couldn't they just have stayed away from her? If legal troubles were really their main concern, couldn't they have just chosen to avoid her entirely? The prosecution interprets this as evidence that Raymond harmed Tina because he had sex with her, and then found out later that she was only 15. Okay, I mean, I guess that makes a little bit more sense, but even then, Tina wasn't a big fan of law enforcement, or even her CFS caseworkers. Why would Raymond be concerned that Tina was gonna rat him out to the police? She herself was doing drugs, and police had already identified her as a runaway under the care of CFS. Wait. Remember the night Raymond and Tina argued? Tina ran outside screaming and called 911 to report Raymond's stolen truck, using his alias Sebastian, because she was upset that he had sold her bicycle for drugs. And this is the last physical account we have of Tina alive that can be confirmed. Maybe the fact that she was able to so boldly call police and accuse Raymond of stealing indicated to him that if Tina was angry enough, she could report sexual assault because of her age. The defense as you might have assumed, takes a different route with their interpretation of this recording. Raymond's attorney, Tony Kavanaugh, argues that if it was an admission of guilt, why would he be making a bet, as he so plainly does in the recording? Tony explains that Raymond believed he was Tina's surrogate dad. This can be taken any number of ways. Some of you might say that he's insinuating that he was Tina's sugar daddy, giving her drugs, money, and a place to stay in exchange for sex. Others might see Raymond as a realistic father figure that really took Eugene's place after his passing. Either way, their relationship is far from normal. Tony continues his argument by explaining that Raymond had given Tina and Cody drugs and a place to stay. We've confirmed this via Cody's testimony, that he did indeed receive drugs from Raymond, and Raymond did take both Tina and Cody to various houses throughout Winnipeg. He goes on to say that what Raymond is insinuating in this recording is that someone else may have found out that she was only 15, and not the 16 or 18 she sometimes claimed to be. He insists that Raymond is saying Tina died not because he killed her, but because he let her go that night. I think it's a little too coincidental for her to vanish and the last place she was confirmed to have been seen be Raymond's home in the middle of an argument. But let's continue. Here's the next recording.
You're 15 years old, I knew it, right? When I found out, I mean, I'm not gonna bang anymore. I don't want to do it that way.
In case you didn't get that, Raymond says, she was 15. I didn't know that. When I found out, that was it. I said, I'm not going to bang her no more. I don't want nothing to do with you that way. The prosecution uses this recording as proof that Raymond had sex with Tina. On three different occasions, the prosecution says Raymond admits to having sex with her. They believe this to relate to Raymond's motive to kill her. Tony, on the defense, views this recording not as an admission that Raymond did have sex with her, but instead, as a verbal expression of Raymond's desire to have sex with Tina that halted once he learned she was only 15. This recording is tricky for me. I find that it falls in the middle of both arguments. It's unclear from the recording whether or not Raymond did have sex with Tina, but it is clear that he decided he no longer wanted to after he learned of her true age. Now, I can't play the next recording because Raymond does use profanity, but here's the transcription. If I could reverse time, I'd say I'm gonna have sex with her, and I'm gonna have sex with her properly, and then you can call the cops and put me in jail for the next 10 years. Okay, slightly contradictory to his first two comments. Here, he doesn't mention his concern about her age. Instead, he says if he could do it all over again, he would do it and suffer the consequences. This is exactly how the prosecution interprets it, as more evidence that Tina's murder was motivated by Raymond's sexual attraction to her. Okay, Tony makes an odd argument here that I found difficult to follow. He says that this isn't an admission of guilt or even an indicator of motive, but instead, it's an expression of regret. Because again, he didn't stop Tina from leaving when she stormed off the night that they fought. It's clear the image that Tony is trying to paint of his client is one of resentment for implicit participation in her eventual murder by allowing her to leave the house at 22 Carmen Avenue. Next, we have a conversation recorded on November 18th, 2015. And again, Raymond uses profanity, so I'll just stick to the transcription. Unfortunately, there's a little girl in a grave someplace screaming at the top of her lungs for me to finish the job. And guess what? I finished the job. Okay. We know Tina's body was pulled from the Red River, not from a grave. Is Raymond talking about a second victim? Anyway, that's the way I interpreted it. But it could just be a metaphor for Tina's murder. The prosecution decides this recording is in fact an admission of guilt from Raymond to Tina's murder. But Tony actually argues that the transcription is wrong, and that what Raymond actually says is, guess what? I'm finishing the job. A difference in tenses, where the transcription says he finished the job, and Tony argues he said, I'm finishing the job. The transcriber for these conversations was an objective professional who was called to the stand during the trial. The defense questioned the accuracy of his transcription and asked him if there were ever any instances that he was unable to directly transcribe and had to kind of guess what Raymond was saying. The transcriber made it clear that if there was ever a moment he didn't fully understand, he marked it as inaudible. To me, if Raymond said, I'm finishing the job, I actually find that to be a bit more incriminating, because it insinuates that Raymond is kind of cleaning up the mess. But I guess you could also see it as Raymond's way of saying he's taking the fall for something he didn't do. Tony says Raymond says he's finishing the job because he's actively looking for Tina's killer and wants to understand the circumstances surrounding her death. Here is the next recording.
You know what? I'm not gonna be saying that for you to murder.
I know it was short, so if you didn't quite catch it, Raymond says, I beat two murders. To me, this fell back on the idea I had after hearing him mention a grave, that maybe there's a second victim. And indeed, the prosecution argues that Raymond is referring to the death of a domestic violence victim named Jenna. Who is Jenna? During Project Styx, Winnipeg Police Service staged a loud argument between two undercover officers in Raymond's apartment building on October 1st, 2015. The female officer, who went by the name Jenna, was made to look badly beaten up as she pretended to be unconscious while another undercover officer carried her out of the building. Jenna was removed from the undercover operation, leading Raymond to believe she had indeed been murdered. Okay, not the type of second victim I was thinking, but we'll roll with it. If Raymond is saying he beat two murders in this recording, and one of them is known to police as being the staged beating of Jenna, then which is the other? I mean, if it's not Tina, then who else did Raymond kill? On the defense's side, Tony says this recording was taken from a conversation that happened in September, and we know the staged murder happened in October. Great. So is Raymond talking about two additional murders? Tony says this is an out-of-the-blue, random comment that shouldn't be used against Raymond. What? Someone under investigation for the murder of a 15-year-old Aboriginal girl randomly says he beat two murders to his crime friends and we should disregard it? Yeah. Okay. The next recording has profanity, again, and it's quite lengthy, so please bear with me. Here we go. You ever been haunted by something? I know I'm really moving into the realm of psychiatry, psychology. What happened there, really? It's not right. It's right on the shore. So what do I do? Threw her in. The undercover officer conversing with him says, what do you mean? And Raymond continues, I did, Tina. Supposed to be legal and only 15. No going back, too. The cop said if there would have been DNA, and then probably they would have had enough evidence to charge me, you know, for that, for the murder of Tina Fontaine. Tina Fontaine's dead. I told you she was. What happened that night? I told him what happened, that is, if there may or may not be any problems, but someone saw the truck, and what time, get this. Do you know what mom means when you're being investigated? In investigated and me being investigated, you know what mom means? Okay, let's say you're this guy. Let's say you're the Crown prosecutor and I'm the cop. You say, well, okay, let's see if this guy did it. Did he have the mom? You know what the mom is? The mom is the mean, the opportunity, and the motive. There's things you don't know about the investigation that went down, and they're not that great because people always, I know that I got caught in a situation. I have never murdered anybody. That's what everyone's telling them. I stabbed a few people, but how old is that? Shot them up a bit, and then I know I raised, I know that. I don't do that. If I could reverse time, man, I would have sex with her. I'd go to jail for things that happened for having sex with her that time. I'd go to jail if it could bring her back again and forget and regret this happened and may, I would. My word, I would. If I could reverse time right now with Tina there and Sarah says, what are you doing with that girl? I'd say I'm gonna have sex with her. I'm gonna have sex with her properly, and then you can call the cops and put me in jail for the next 10 years. Before I continue, the Sarah that's mentioned briefly in this recording is a friend of Raymond's that we're gonna touch on a little later. This recording is the nail in the coffin for the prosecution. They believed it to be enough to convict Raymond of Tina's murder. He mentions someone seeing his truck, which the prosecution argues he uses to dispose of Tina's body. And then he says something about being right on the shore. I think he might be talking about the banks of the Red River and how he might have left her there or wasn't sure if she was gonna sink, so he weighed her down with rocks. The defense, of course, points to Raymond saying that he's not a murderer and that he doesn't do that, as proof that Raymond is simply putting himself in the shoes of the killer. Tony argues that he's using psychology to analyze why the police suspect him. While it's impossible for us to imagine what it would feel like to be tried for a crime you didn't commit, I think it could be possible for Raymond to be cracking under the pressure. This could cause him to take a step back and ramble on during a conversation about how the police suspect him, blaming wrong timing, or even someone else using his truck. The last recording that was played at trial is the following. It also has profanity, so I'll go ahead and read the transcription. It's noted that this recording was taken from Raymond's apartment while he was talking and singing to himself alone. You think you'll get murder out of me, hmm? That's it, man. Get away from me, off, get out of here. To me, this just sounds like a ramble, or even some sort of psychotic episode, where Raymond feels like something is attacking him or pestering him in some way. The prosecution says they don't need this recording to prove Raymond's guilt. And the defense argues that this is the most bizarre attempt the prosecution could make to interpret something as an admission of guilt. There was no psych evaluation done on Raymond, that I could find at least. This could be because his defense attorney argued against it, as there was no interest in pleading insanity. The prosecution had a thin case, lacking concrete evidence tying Raymond to the Red River where Tina's body was dumped. But I think it's clear that there are some mental health issues going on, and this recording is proof of that. The prosecution took 12 days to lay out their case to the jury. Raymond pleaded not guilty to second-degree murder. Aside from the recordings, other pieces of evidence were presented, including Raymond's connection to the duvet cover that was wrapped around Tina's body. A former friend of Raymond's, Ernest DeWolf, says he saw him with the duvet cover. He testified, "I recall seeing it because he had some clothes and duffel bags, and he had it out on the floor. The blanket came out of the bag he had, and he put some stuff on top of it." Ernest's friendship with Raymond began at Stony Mountain Institution in 2011, when they were both inmates. They also lived at the same halfway house after their release, but eventually had a falling out as a result of money Raymond owed to Ernest. In the summer of 2014, the two friends reconnected, during which Raymond introduced Ernest to two friends that were living at the house at 22 Carmen Avenue. These two friends were identified as Sarah Holland and Terrell Morrison. Raymond says they did drugs together, and this is where Ernest spots the duvet cover. Ernest continues to tell the jury that Raymond admitted to sleeping with Tina. Two women came forward and testified that the duvet cover looked the same as the one Raymond had been using while living in a tent in their backyard. She said she had seen two cigarette burn marks in the duvet cover that Raymond had. The duvet was brought out to show the jury the two holes that were apparent in the fabric. However, it couldn't be determined if they were cigarette burn marks, as they resembled more of a tear or a rip in the fabric. The tag found on the duvet was a brand only sold in Winnipeg at the city's three Costco locations. Homicide detectives obtained a list from the stores of more than 800 people who had bought that same patterned duvet in the city. Police also seized several additional blankets from the house at 22 Carmen Avenue, blankets that were then described as Mexican style. An expert in trace evidence and textiles was brought in to determine if fibers from the duvet could be found on the blankets to indicate that they both had been in the house at 22 Carmen Avenue. The expert explained that because of the Mexican style of the blankets, they were made of several different materials, including dyed and recycled fabrics. It would be impossible to determine the presence of fibers from the duvet. A mitochondrial DNA expert was called to the stand. He was sent 35 DNA samples taken from the duvet cover and also from the truck that Tina had reported stolen. Not to get too technical, but mitochondrial DNA is different from nuclear DNA. The sample sent to this expert had already been tested for nuclear DNA. The mitochondrial DNA expert explained that there are more copies of mitochondria than nuclei. So if a DNA expert is unable to get a clear DNA profile from nuclear DNA, then they'll try running it for mitochondrial DNA. Raymond's DNA was tested against 17 hair samples that were taken from the duvet cover and recovered from two items inside the stolen truck. Tina's DNA did not match with the samples found in the truck, and 14 of the 17 hairs found on the sample did not belong to her. Raymond wasn't a match for any of the hair samples. Remember that friend of Raymond's, Terrell Morrison? Well, the expert testified that he couldn't be ruled out, as his DNA contributed to a mixed DNA sample that was taken from the truck. The sample was mixed with at least one other person's DNA. And the other person wasn't Raymond, and it wasn't Tina. A pathologist was also called to the stand, who confirmed the findings documented in the autopsy report. The condition of Tina's body had already reached a point that did not allow the pathologist to conclusively determine her cause of death. After 13 hours of deliberation, a jury of 7 women and 4 men found Raymond Cormier not guilty of second-degree murder. To this day, no one has been charged with Tina's murder. Her death initiated the creation of two organizations in the Winnipeg area that are devoted to the missing and murdered Aboriginal individuals in their communities. The first is called the Bear Clan Patrol. They are an independently organized group that patrols inner city neighborhoods that are heavily concentrated with the Aboriginal population. The goal of the Bear Clan Patrol is to provide personal security in a non-threatening, non-violent, and supportive way. They seek to prevent crime and provide a sense of solidarity among the community. The idea is community people working with the community. The second organization is Drag the Red. Drag the Red is an organization made up of members of the Aboriginal community that volunteer their time to drag the bottom of Winnipeg's Red River in search of their missing loved ones. Sometimes these volunteers pick up pieces of clothing or shoes, or more often, women's underwear. Everything they collect is handed over to police as potential evidence. The Red River is extremely murky, and the risk of anyone diving down there is simply too high. Police are aware of Drag the Red, but believe there is no reason to search the Red River. After Tina's body was found, many believed she would not be the last to be recovered from the river. Every day, several members of Drag the Red board their small boat and begin to drag for hours. I will link the website to both of these organizations in the show notes. I highly recommend you check them out because what they are doing for their communities is incredible. Now, I know I said I would cover a couple of cases in these two episodes, and so far, I've only covered Tina's. I didn't expect to be able to find so much material and detailed information on her case. These two episodes will only focus on Tina, but you have my word that I will continue a conscious effort to focus on cases that might not receive the media coverage they deserve because the victim is a member of a racially stigmatized group or minority. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Let me know if you think Raymond is guilty or innocent. Remember to follow the podcast on Instagram and Twitter at DeadWrongPod. There you can find exclusive episode content like pictures from today's case. You can always leave a rating or review on the podcast page. Again, this has been Dead Wrong, and my name is Elizabeth, but you get to call me Liz. I'll see you next time.